director, a former Jesuit, both within 2 months of each other. At the same time, I had a bit of property issue to deal with, which involved seeking legal advice, whilst also coping with a lot of haranguing from several people in relation to the matter. I eventually got an offer from someone to buy my property on the 1 year anniversary of my boyfriend's death. This timing in itself, I now view as prophetic, and embarked on a pilgrimage of sorts in November that year, the anniversary of my spiritual director's death. A long drive down the East Coast and beyond. These events were a significant synchronicity for me. They coincided with me also finishing grief counselling, and the process symbolised a movement from tragedy into a new phase, the embodiment of a slow seeping light. Although I felt quite distant from God at the time, and for the next couple of years, indeed I avoided church altogether during that period, I did feel propelled by the call to do and be something else. I couldn't articulate it, I just knew I needed to keep moving. So I didn't settle for a while, moved house a lot, and wrote that first screenplay. In regard to screenwriting, people in that industry sometimes ask, what are your six key scenes? I was asked that by someone after I'd outlined my first story and then told him about it. Well, for me, when I was asked to give this talk, I immediately thought of the analogy of six life phases. Desolation or grief, crisis or grief, emptiness, the slow pilgrimage, turning point, re-enchantment, and finally, finding the prophetic path. Part of the Isaiah reading that we just heard also particularly speaks to me. No need to remember past events. No need to think about what was done before. Look, I'm doing something new. Now it emerges. Can you not see it? Those six phases I mentioned could also be used as an analogy, or could even be condensed into four, such as tragedy, pilgrimage, conversion and renewal, or prophetic mission. It doesn't matter. The point is the same. New life can come out of tragic or difficult events. There have been other similar pilgrimages in previous decades. Like in the early 1990s when I went on a religious search, again after a very difficult time in my personal life. Drawn to the inherent mysticism and ritual of Catholicism, I then became a Catholic. Despite some of my misgivings about institutionalised religion, and that religion in particular. In quick succession, I studied a theology degree with the Marists of an evening and started hospital chaplaincy during the day. All these events took place seemingly outside my control, but as we have often heard, it's the still small voice, and I felt compelled to continue. The pilgrimage and the finding of a prophetic path continued. In 2014, I was privileged to meet Franciscan priest Father Richard Rohr in Santa Fe, New Mexico, at a Spiritual Directors International Convention. Richard had kindly endorsed an American revised edition of my previous book, now called 12 Steps to Spiritual Freedom, and was one of the speakers at the convention. Other speakers included Buddhists and a former Jesuit, his wife and his Jesuit priest brother, who presented their research findings on near-death experiences. They revealed a common report of those having near-death experiences, the idea of the life review. Santa Fe was another significant milestone in my life because it further highlighted the movement to new life and a prophetic call to try to capture what I had seen. New Mexico, and particularly Ghost Ranch in the mountain ranges of New Mexico, where I attended a retreat, have been the haven of many artists, writers, and spiritual searchers. The artist Georgia O'Keeffe lived and worked there for many years. The area is considered to be a thin place, a place where the line between the material world and the spiritual world is said to be very thin. It has a history of high occupation by the indigenous American Indian population and also by Mexicans. Once again, I found myself experiencing the profound presence of the other. Desert environments have always spoken to me, even as far back as 1984, when I was at a stopover in Amman, Jordan, long before I ever entertained any interest in Christianity or spirituality for that matter. I looked out of my hotel room at the desert and saw something I can't describe there. It was a feeling of the transcendent I can't explain, and I certainly wasn't Christian at the time, just slowly waking up. So where else has my own pilgrimage journey taken me? During lockdown, I did an online course on Mary Magdalene with Cynthia Bourgeau, which was life-changing. It highlighted Magdalene's role as a beloved disciple and the apostle to the apostles in Jesus' ministry. I've also studied and explored the recent scholarship around women disciples, and indeed tend to agree with Cynthia that there weren't so much as 12 disciples as around 70, many of whom were women who provided for Jesus out of their own purse, as well as taking on spiritual leadership roles in the early Christian community. From my research into contemplative spirituality, the work of Richard Rohr, Cynthia Bourgeau, Thomas Merton, the Benedictine monk E. Griffiths, Sufis like Rumi, and other mystics who speak such wisdom, it seems clear that the heart is the centre of who we are. Everything comes out of the heart, in both the mystical and the monastic context. I've learned to listen and watch out for signs along the way. The Benedictine and Jesuit traditions, particularly Ignatian discernment, have particularly informed me. But so has psychology and contemporary spiritual programs that are free from religious dogma. All these things contribute to the whole. I realised on Holy Saturday this year that it was the 30-year anniversary of my conversion to Catholicism, an anniversary with mixed blessings, as well as some other difficult life events, such as the death of my sister. It was also a chance to reflect on the many highs and lows in my own faith journey, including the desolation and disillusionment with the institutional churches and what has happened to them over the past 20 years in particular. Yet I haven't thrown the baby out with the bathwater in dealing with my occasional dismay or cynicism towards institutionalized religion or the world around me for that matter. As Cynthia Bourgeau has referred to in regard to her own spiritual journey, I've just replanted myself in a bigger pot. I am still part of the institutional church, but I view it through a much bigger lens. I also love the ecumenical and contemplative gifts of places like Benedictus that help feed and enrich the spiritual hunger of myself and so many people. Certainly the Spirit is awakening and calling many people to different forms of inclusive community worship. Having worked with various communities like the HIV community up until a couple of years ago, and also having worked in a multi-faith context at a university for the past 7 years, I've also opened up to the spiritual framework of other cultural and faith traditions. I attend Muslim Friday prayers most weeks as part of my job, and I will never forget the limb, when the first time I had the liminal experience of hearing the beautiful call to prayer, something that has stayed with me always. I also love the idea of the word Islam, meaning submission to God. It is true, I think, what they say, when you are prostrate before God, you are closest to him or her. As the research I mentioned also suggests before, I also like the Hindu idea that when we die, we have a life review, where we get to assess how we did in our lives, the good and the bad. Again, like reviewing those key scenes from a movie. In closing, I particularly love Rumi's poem, so beautifully read by Anne the other night, "This being human is a guest house," and the idea of accepting both the good and the bad in our lives. As he says, be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond.